All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 317 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am not joined this week by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. I think he's gone to see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert again. And I only say that because we've not done that joke in literally years. But no, Stu, unfortunately, not with us this week. However, I am joined by the chairman of the Don's Trust Board, Chris Stewart. Chris, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us.
Pleasure. Hi.
We're going to get into some Don's Trust issues, of course, over the course of this week's show. Slightly shorter version of the podcast, but nonetheless, action-packed, I think, is how we might term it to make up for that. So we're talking about Don's Trust issues, but just very briefly to start with, let's just have a brief talk about the men's first team. Currently 10 without a win. I'm assuming you were at Plough Lane on Saturday for the Crawley game.
I wasn't, actually. No. Okay.
That's why you should never assume.
I'm not being a good Nick. I've got a bit of knee trouble, which is I've not managed to get sorted. and over the last week, I've not been able to get about so well. So I forwent the pleasure of Plough Lane. It sounds like I didn't miss a classic game, and certainly, obviously, didn't miss a classic performance or result.
You missed none of the above. It was the problem is that often it is said that's the worst game of football I've ever seen, and you hear that about three or four times a season. I think I've said it myself a couple of times recently. Unfortunately, I think Crawley will become the measuring stick of which all future poor games will be measured. Zero shots on target. Really disjointed performance. I felt as if once we'd gone 1-0 down, I mean, some of you that follow the podcast on Twitter would have seen, I actually thought we would go 1-0 down, but come back and win the game. And I thought we'd finally get this poor run put to an end. But actually, inside Plough Lane on Saturday, when Crawley went 1-0 up, there was just this atmosphere that just felt like it was never going to happen, that we weren't going to score. I kind of felt it straight from kickoff as well. It's not great when we get into that sort of situation, is it, where you almost feel defeated before you've begun?
No, it's not great at all. And clearly, you know, there's no putting a spin on results. It's been a while since we've had a win. It's been a while since we've come away from a game thinking that was good. You know, that was great, even if we didn't win, you know. So, you know, there's no putting a gloss on that, really. Johnny has talked about all the things which have been affecting the team. I think you can see that, you know, we did quite well for a period earlier in the season. Since January, we've lost players to player trading and to injury, which has been, quite damaging on a personal level, because, you know, I'm not the football person at all. Do you know what I mean? I neither know anything nor should I, you know, espouse on it, if you like. But I was always worried that losing Ayuba Sal would be really damaging to the creativity of the side. There wasn't any choice, for us in that, it would seem. And I think it's been, you know, part of what's been difficult to replace. Someone like that you, mate, you can never go and buy that, can you? It's been poor.
I want to come back onto Ayuba Sal actually, maybe in a little bit. But sure. The thing you mentioned there, I think especially, of course, injuries, massive at this moment in time. Yeah. It feels like we're struggling to put out an 11 for Barrow on Saturday at present time. We've got the injury issues that seem to be mounting up. We hear rumours of perhaps a couple that will also be missing on Saturday alongside the ones we already know, including Lee Brown, Harry Pell, Paul Callanby and such like. Not aided this week by Ali Alhamadi off on international duty, Aaron Pierre off on international duty. Mm. And then the Chris Gunter situation. Now, I know, Chris, you're the chairman of the Don's Trust and not the PLC, so you're not involved in the day-to-day football sort of side of things and things like that. It's an unfortunate situation. I've got no problem whatsoever with Chris Gunter pursuing a coaching career. And if this is part of him doing that, which I'm sure, as has been said by the club statement the other day, you know, pre-agreed, which Okay, an interesting. I love that. Pre-agreed, as opposed to post-agreed. But I don't have an issue with that. It's just unfortunate, isn't it? The timing of it, the fact I don't think we were allowed to mention this or say anything about this until this week, just adds to a seemingly almost that's adds to the frustration I think of many fans.
I think anything that feels a bit negative that happens, you know, when you're in a run which isn't great, it is going to feel worse, isn't it? You know, I think if this particular situation with Chris Gunter had happened, you know, during the time when we were looking upwards at the playoffs, I think it would have, you know, landed quite differently with people. And that's, you know, that's entirely understandable because we go to football to watch our team, well, to watch our team, but to watch our team win, you know. And when it's not, when that's not happening, you know, things don't feel great. But as you say, you know, we want to support players right the way through their careers to make sure that they have a good introduction to football, that players who don't make it in football have a good introduction to life, and we need to, you know, take care of people at the other end. I'm not aware of, nor would I discuss if I was, let's be honest, you know, the ins and outs of exactly who agreed what with whom when, and that's not for me to sort of make a judgment on. I, you know, trust the people who take those decisions, and that's our job, if you like. But yeah, it feels, you know, the timing doesn't feel great because, you know, we're short of players and we don't want to be any shorter of players. I think it doesn't always work out. We've always had, you know, or we've long had a sort of policy of getting our younger players who aren't quite ready for regular first team football, getting them out to clubs so that they can play men's, you know, first team football, and that means that they're not there to fill the bench up. For example, they're not there to take along, you know, if we're a bit short. You make those decisions at a particular time, and then, you know, when the injury situation looks like one thing, and then the injury situation looks like another thing, you know, the decision you can't just, you know, click your fingers and demand that everyone comes running back. So that's a part of, you know, why we have experts, you know, looking at things so they can look after those things. But in the end, there's always a punt in every decision you make. You're making a choice, and there's an element of luck one way or the other, whether and timing comes in, you know, becomes a big part of that.
It's interesting. On that note, we have seen, obviously, recently players like Alfie Bendall have been brought back in to fill out the squad. I think it looks like, apologies, I'm going to call him David. I think it's actually David Fisher has been recalled from Hampton Richmond Borough. A rumour I heard that Dylan Adjei-Hirsey has also been recalled. So clearly what you just gleaned from that is, unfortunately, it's almost getting hit twice, isn't it? It's like you say, you want these players to be out getting experience of men's first team football, helping their development. But unfortunately, when you get to a stage where you're suffering this quite incredible run of injuries or run of luck with injuries, that not only do they miss out on their opportunity to development, we are short of first team players. But hey, I mean, it is what it is. We are where we are. We're not in any danger of relegation, of course. But the season does feel it's petering out a little bit. One thing you probably, I don't know how much you would have seen or anything like that, talking about how disappointed the performance was on Saturday, 7,300 was the officially announced crowd at Plough Lane. I will guarantee you now, Chris, that 7,300 people were not inside Plough Lane at the start of the second half. And I can doubly guarantee you.
It's pretty unlikely 7,300 people were inside Plough Lane at the beginning of the first half.
That's what I was going to come to.
We have ever since, you know, if we have for 20 years, and like other clubs do, you know, in the leagues we play in, we announce tickets sold, including season tickets, and we don't announce, you know, number of people in the ground, and that's you know, for all sorts of reasons, so that the numbers make sense. It's much easier to put that number together. And it's consistent with other clubs, and it's consistent with our practices over 20 years. So that's what we do. That's what we've always done. I guess, are you asking about, you know, people being less interested in coming if we're not doing very well? Is that
Nothing else than that. Because as you say, I think I at least are well versed in, as you say, the attendance figure is always based on tickets sold, not necessarily to people in attendance. My concern is just, yeah, how many, because what I'm looking at is I'm looking at Walsall next Tuesday, midweek home game. And I'm just thinking there are going to be people that won't be coming back this season, I think, after Crawley. I know a couple of people do say that as they're in a bit of a mood at full time and they storm out of the stadium saying this. But, you know, there's a good reason to think there are a few that won't do. It just seems like we're a bit cursed at this moment in time. Because
you would generally expect, the team that's doing well would attract more people to come watch, wouldn't you? And therefore, if you think that, you have to think the opposite as well, don't you? I mean, otherwise it doesn't make sense. It doesn't all, stack up back and forth. So, I think actually one of the things that seems kind of stands out to me is how well crowds have held up over the last two seasons. In fact, over the last, to be honest, quite some time. Yeah. We've moved from Kings Meadow to Plough Lane, to Cherry Red Record Stadium, and we've kind of doubled our basic crowd, if you like, more or less. And we've had games this season where there's been no seats available for sale.
Yeah,
we had games last season where there were no seats available for sale, and at our level, that's pretty impressive in terms of fullness of the stadium, etc. But yeah, of course you have to think that if winning football attracts people, then the opposite must be the case as well. So that's something to be concerned about. But you want to win games because you want to be a successful football team. That's the and other things flow from that. There's lots and lots you can do outside. Lots that Danny Macklin's here to do outside the sort of what happens on the pitch. But yeah, in the end, it comes down to what happens on the pitch, doesn't it?
This is it. This is what we said. What brings people to football at the end of the day is what happens on the pitch and how successful your side is. I think the point I'm making is it just sort of underlines how, again, we seem to be headed for, unless we have some incredible turnaround in the last few games of the season, which I must admit I'm not anticipating at this moment in time, it's a real challenge then for the club, for the PLC, for Danny Macklin, in terms of starting to generate season tickets and things like that for next season. It just feels like we're a bit cursed. I'm trying to think, it was last season probably when we started the season quite well. It was actually the first, arguably only, maybe second season where we started the season well because we've ended the preceding season on a real high.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I get you.
And I think last season, obviously, 27 games without a win, and you come into the start of the season. It's difficult, isn't it, when you have these, when you want to start a season hitting the ground running, but you're always sort of got what happened before kind of loitering in the background and hanging over. And I think this season, for example, mentality of last season for the first team seems to have still been a hangover for this season in terms of losing leads and things like that.
I think in terms of, hangover or in terms of, changes that have happened, I think you've got to remember how much change we've been through, I guess, and how many challenges we've been through over the recent years. If you're only looking at the football side, that move we had Eric, who was around for what, 12 years as chief exec, I think, and he wasn't new to the club when he took that on. He moved on. We had to build a new stadium. We moved from Kings Meadow. We had a stumble over financing, didn't we? And we had to get through that. We opened a new stadium during COVID. We got through COVID. People worked very hard. People paid money to not go to see football matches. That meant we kept our head above water. All those things, and then you look on the pitch and you see that we've not had a settled, management side for quite some time. There have been all sorts of questions and issues around, how we've managed to put sides together and whether we've done that in the best way or whatever. That's why we've made all the changes we've made over the last sort of year and a half, which is, that we've sort of recognised that, football is and the business needs to be driving, cash into the rest of the club. The football needs, a proper structure that from top to bottom, you know, looks after plans, you know, for in ahead, sorry, in advance, so that you know what sort of players you're looking for, you know where you're going to get them from, you know, all of those things. That's why, you know, Craig Cope is here. That's why, and that's why Danny Macklin's here as MD as well, because, you know, clearly things haven't been working fantastically over the last few years, and, you know, gelling brilliantly well. And in fact, you could say since we came back in the league, there haven't been very many seasons that you would call good as a whole season. We've had some fantastic, obviously we had the promotion season. That was at least half of that season was great, you know, and we've had some fantastic moments during other seasons as well. That's not to say, but, you know, it hasn't been, you know, 3 or 4 years of solid, you know, good football or enjoyable football or winning football or whatever. So, you know, we've had to change things. So that's what we've done. But there's been all of that massive change. You know, that takes a while to bear fruit. And in the middle of that, you know, we had the failure of last season on the pitch and relegation, which was a blow all round, and obviously changed his plans as well.
Mm. And we won't explore this now, but I think I said many years ago, it always seemed to be watching FC Wimbledon. It always felt like, I always said, it seemed like we had a little guardian angel on our shoulder where in key moments things would fall for us. And it just seems to be the last couple of years that all that good luck seems to be being clawed back, like our debts being claimed, especially when you look at winless runs and injuries and all things like that, and monies and things like that. And also losing players in January. So just to go back very quickly, Ayuba Sal, obviously, I don't know, does this fall into your remit in terms of the money that we receive for Ayuba Sal? There still seems, and I think it's probably out there somewhere, an explanation of what the club has thought to do with the money that's come in from there, but I don't know if people know where to look, or if they do, they don't. I don't know what it is, but I mean, what's your understanding of that?
I guess there's two bits of that. One is, you know, how does it work in general? One is, you know, about Ayuba and the money we've got for Ayuba. So in general, I would say, I mean, that we probably wouldn't want to talk about those things in too much detail at the time when we're doing any of that sort of business. We particularly want to give people, you know, tell people what's going on, you know, during the windows, for example. So that's why, for example, after the summer window last year, there was a fairly detailed sort of thing that came from the board from the Don's Trust board at the time. And after this window, I think Mix, you know, talked about things. Because that's the time to do it, if you like. You know, we do need to do our business, in private, if you will, or at least, you know, without the sort of glare of publicity on a day-to-day basis, and then explain to fans and members what we've done and why we've done it. And hopefully in future we'll be able to, you know, we'll be able to do that even better. But as far as the money that's come in is concerned, so there's a sort of technical part of that, if you like, which is that under the rules that we added, changed, updated in December that we're finishing off at the moment, so Don's Trust members should all have an email with a voting link to accept or reject the changes to our rules that kind of will match the PLC rules and make sure that our protections are kind of up to date for our new home at Plough Lane and so on. So under that, there's a couple of things. One of those says that if we have a sort of one-off income, you know, one-off piece of income, which is more than, I think, 7.5% of the previous year's turnover, I think, is what it says. I haven't got it in front of me. Then, you know, the PLC board needs to make a plan for that, but the Don's Trust board needs to sign it off. You know, we don't, the Don's Trust board doesn't want to interfere in the day-to-day, but when there's a significant windfall, it falls to us as a Don's Trust board to say, yeah, that's the right kind of direction, that's the right kind of thing. This is, you know, we should be spending all of that on players. No, we should be spending that all on air conditioning, or, you know, paying off debt, or whatever that might be. So that's a kind of a final say. But the plan comes from the PLC board. I think what's been said over time is that in last September, and then after this window, is currently with the drop in income from having dropped down from League One to League Two, there's a gap that we need to make up in the playing budget from the lost sort of central revenue, etc. And so that's kind of been the first, or that's a first call, if you like, in as much as we want to make sure that the playing budget doesn't suffer, if you like. So we haven't talked about the number, so I'm not going to talk about the number and how much that was. But the first thing to do with that is to ensure that we can keep the playing budget at a good level, at a decent level, for next season. So that's the first part of that. And then it's a question, it's an ongoing conversation about what we do with the rest of it. Does it make sense to put that into the plans for the third floor building out, for example? Does it make sense to put that into some fixing that needs doing around the stadium? Does it make sense to pay off a bit of debt? Does it make sense to put something into the playing budget? So there was a bit released, and a bit of additional money released as well to do some business ourselves during the window. So that wasn't a huge amount of money, but it was useful for Johnny, and it was what Johnny and his team asked for.
Thank you. I suppose just to overall summarise that, for some, it might simply be a case of saying transfer fees that come in to the club are essentially not automatically going to be redirected straight into the first team squad. That's essentially what it is, which is fine. It's just that's sometimes not automatically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's just, I think that just, we all know where we stand there and what with that. So some people that might be expecting 1 million to come in for a year, but then suddenly has to go on a bit of a spending spree, it's not going to happen like that.
No, and just to be very clear, one of the reasons that's not going to happen is because, the money that we got from Jack Curry, sorry.
Jack Curry, Jack Doney, don't do that to me. There's an exclusive for you.
Oops. Money we got from Jack Doney. There is no exclusive about Jack Curry.
No.
The money we got from Jack Widoni, to quite some extent, went into ensuring that we had a what we thought at the time was a decent playing budget for this season. Mm-hmm. I think, if you looked around and asked people, they were probably expecting that Ayoub would not be with us beyond the summer. I guess quite a few people were expecting that Ayoub wouldn't be with us beyond the summer. I was kind of hoping he'd be here for a while, but there we go. If he'd gone in this summer, then similarly to how Jack Widoni moving on helped us to put together a decent budget for the following season, we would have expected the same. So we need to make sure that there isn't going to be a big drop in the playing budget for next season.
Now, in typical teacher style, I've run long. So let's move on to the conversation that sort of was the springboard for me inviting you onto the podcast this week. The Dons Trust Board elections in November, for which the election steering group made some recommendations to the Dons Trust Board at your February meeting. And there was a query made on the Dons Trust Pro Boards, the sort of forum for Dons Trust members, exclusive to Dons Trust members. The query was regarding recommendation M, for future election cycles, which stated access to the election survey be only provided to the election steering group and the Dons Trust secretary during an election period, and any issues such as capacity or software for reminders to be addressed early on in the process. The mm-hmm. query was, had something happened that made the election steering group make that recommendation? Was there a specific event that happened? It transpired there had been. There was an issue over capacity of the election software that you were trying to investigate. So we had the Dons Trust board elections going on at the same time as what I believe the board wanted to do, a fan survey of some description using the same software. There was a concern over the capacity. So you investigated, and in investigating, there was some change with the login details for that software that meant that members of the election steering group could not access it.
Yeah. That's all true. So it was the first election with new software. Previously, the Don's Trust had used SurveyMonkey, and the decision had been made before I joined the board to switch to Smart Survey. I think there was some question about where data is stored, I think, that was behind that. But I wasn't part of that decision, so I couldn't be sure about. But what I do know, if you like, is that nobody was aware. Having set that up, nobody was aware that there was a limit of 10,000 email sends per month on the Smart Survey account that had been bought by the Don's Trust board. So, and actually, you know, I found out when I was looking at, as you say, doing some engagement. If you remember, we were planning quite a few changes at the AGM, and in advance of that, we talked about them at the Don's Trust SGM, and we said we're going to engage with members, and part of that engagement was was going to be surveys. So realizing that the election was on at the same time, I checked in terms of email sends so that I wasn't nothing the board did would cause a problem. As then that it came out that it's 10,000 emails per month would not allow the ESG, the election steering group, to run their usual set of reminders. One of the things about electronic voting that you find is that people vote immediately when they get their email, or they don't vote, really.
Yeah.
And so if they haven't voted, pretty much in the first sort of week or so after the things first go out, they probably won't unless you get them a reminder. So it's been the practice of the ESG to send a number of reminders out. With 3,500 members or whatever, voting members, maybe not quite that many voting members, it doesn't take long for that 10,000 to get eaten up. So obviously we decided, we're not going to use Smart Survey for the additional engagement because that's going to cause a problem. We certainly won't do that. But actually that doesn't solve the problem. You still won't be able to do it. So we had to look into how to extend that number, make that number bigger, that 10,000. So told the ASG about what the problem was and that I was investigating it. Speaking to Smart Survey, the company, they said, in order to have a proper conversation with us about this, top level account has to be in a natural name. So we've tended to have things in the name of, for example, Secretary at and Chair at, if you like. And they said, we won't talk to somebody unless they have an email address with a name, a person's name. And that has to be the name of the person who's talking to us. So followed the Smart Survey rep instructions and amended the account details as suggested to my name and email address. And before I had, so I'd been, letting the ESG know what was going on. Before I'd managed to let the ESG know what was going on, giving them an update, they tried to access the account using the old details. They weren't able to, and obviously, as you can imagine, that was a concern for them. So that's like late in the evening of the 20th of November. So in the morning of the 21st, I updated them. They could access the account, and they didn't have any further issues accessing the account. And the board agreed to pay a small additional fee to Smart Survey to allow up to 15,000 email sends in the 2 months of the election. So in
November and December.
At no time did I access any election information. The ESG reports to the AGM. So they came to the AGM and they explained how they were confident in the election in the AGM to members. After that, they write us a report. That has traditionally been a report that goes to the board and hasn't traditionally been published further than that. One of the things that report says is we were satisfied that nothing had been done to affect our confidence in the results. So that's a good thing. We've amended the account, so the top level is controlled by the DT secretary. There's two separate sub accounts, one for board use, one for ESG use, so that they're separate. We've set up a new email address for the Don's Trust secretary in his natural name, if you like. So that should deal with all of that. As I said, the report is written to the board and has never been published before. The outgoing ESG doesn't have any problem with publishing that. I think the board I've stepped away from that decision, if you like, because I think, you know, if people are concerned about something that I may or may not have done or whatever, then it's probably better for the rest of the board to decide, you know, what to do about that. So I think the board is currently deciding to publish it. So hopefully that will happen soon. I think you raised with me, Nick, my first response to the question on pro boards.
Yes.
You thought that was misleading, I guess. I think that's the word you used, or potentially misleading. It's fine.
Yeah, I use the phrase misleading. I'm not sure if it's the right one.
My understanding, the question was, you know, worded as it was. And I guess I took the question to mean, did the ESG say that something bad had happened to the data?
Yeah.
Or did they want to make sure that in future there were no issues, if you like, you know, a security issue wouldn't arise? And of those two things, I think it is the second. You know, the ESG was clear that they didn't, you know, that's, I can't remember that phrase again, but nothing had been done to affect our confidence in the results.
Yeah.
But clearly, you know, you read that question differently. And so you read my answer differently. And it felt like I was saying there hadn't been an incident that had led to that happening. So yeah. Clearly, you know, that part of the report was written after a situation occasioned by something that I did. So if what I said made you think that I was saying something different from that, then I'm sorry about that. That wasn't my intention. As I say, I was answering, I guess I'd read the question slightly differently and was saying and was answering the question as, you know, was the ESG saying there was a problem with the election or we need to fix something so there shouldn't be a problem in the future? So that's what I was answering. I don't know if that works for you, Nick, at all, but that's kind of where I was at.
I just think from my perspective, when it's presented, were there any issues? I understand what you're saying. Were there any issues with the results of the election itself? I think we put that categorically to bed. But I think when the question is raised, what was the spur for the ESG to suddenly make this recommendation? I would have thought you'd have thought, well, actually, yes, there was something that did happen that would have made this become something they would highlight. Yes, there was no issue with the election itself or accessing any results or anything untoward. There was this perfectly innocent thing that had happened, but I was involved in it. I must admit, I was surprised that wasn't what you said. I think if I'd have been in your position, knowing that an event had happened that I'd have been a part of, I would have just come out and said it. And that's where we'll probably always agree to disagree, I suppose. But
I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, Nick. I just, you know, it's simply that I read it in a particular way and wanted to answer quickly and you read it in a different way. And I think the way you've read it is entirely reasonable. I wouldn't argue with that at all. And, you know, I'm glad that we've got to a situation where we've been able to, you know, talk about the detail behind it so that, you know, people don't need to think about what did those words mean or what did those words mean? What did those other words mean? But actually, you know, people can just see exactly what happened, and hopefully we'll be able to publish the report and people will be able to see, you know, make their own minds up, if you like, on that, I guess.
So, yeah, I think publishing the report I would very much push for. I think it'd be interesting if we could get, I don't know who would be in charge with actually publishing the report. I don't be interested to get a timescale on that one. I think more the point is that then might finally put a nail in the coffin, because totally understand, and I think everyone will understand exactly what you said there, and I think everyone's completely happy that there was nothing untoward going on with the results or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think, as I say, the problem having not addressed what did happen when you first responded, I think there are going to be people that are going to still have a little query in the back of their mind. Sometimes, sure. Some in good faith, some in bad faith, but I think that's fair to say there'll be some people that won't accept anything, but some others that might be, I think, fairly going, did he not mention it because he thought it was just going to go away if he said that? Do you know what I mean? Before we got more context to it, and that was where I was coming from.
Sure. So I mean, my I can't argue with any of that, Nick. You know, and you know, as far as good faith, bad faith is concerned, you know, I think we just have to, I and the board just have to respond to what people say and not try and, you know, read what's in their minds, because I think that's, you know, that's a path to go down that doesn't do any good for anybody. So I think, I guess all I'd say is, I'm very happy for the report to be published. I'd always be happy for the report to be published. It should, you know, the election belongs to the members. The Exeter Steering Group, you know, my view of the Exeter Steering Group is that they work for the members. My view of the Dons Trust Secretary is the Dons Trust Secretary is not the Dons Trust Board Secretary. You know, they are the Dons Trust Secretary. They work for the members as well. And, you know, as soon as, you know, this came up, I said to the rest of the board, look, you know, this is about me, or, you know, about something that someone's saying that I've done. So, you know, it's probably best for me not to be involved in you know, making any decisions about it. Plus, of course, you know, it's not impossible that I might be involved in an election myself later this year. My term comes up. So, you know, there's a decision to make at some point between now and the end of the year, and I could be involved in an election. So that's why James McDonald from the membership, membership, et cetera, group is convening the first meeting this year for the ESG for the in advance of the 2023 election.
Well, Chris, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us this week and going through that. And I'm sure if anyone still has any remaining questions, they can post them on Pro Boards or whatever, or get answers to any questions. I'm sure the discussion can continue. But again, thank you. Before you go, dare I ask for a scoreline prediction for the trip to currently 10th placed Barrow on Saturday with our eight players?
I'm trying to not be my usual gung-ho self. So let's say 2-1 to the Dons.
Okay. Let's hope for one of those. Everyone thinks we've got no chance. We dig one out, typical old Wimbledon style, because I think we all need it. Chris, thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Updates from the game with Barrow will be available on Twitter, of course, at 9YRS Podcast. And then again on Tuesday night when we host Warsaw from Poland on Plough Lane. And I suppose 9 Years TV will be back for that one as well. But all that's left to say, as I usually do, is Alexa Bliss. Bag first, milk last. 2 + 2 = 4. We will speak to you again next week. And save Chip. Don't let Sarah win.